Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 21st, 2026. We begin on the front page with Working for Better Sewers. BNWRD aims to prevent overflows near Sugar Creek by Matus Janik. Eliminating sewage from running off into Sugar Creek or people's basements and the risk of ground instability, releasing potentially toxic gases, is the goal of a major sewer infrastructure project now underway in Southwest Normal. Sean Maurer, district engineer with the Bloomington Normal Water Reclamation District, said the project focuses on expanding a sewer interceptor that runs beneath railroad tracks that cross the creek just west of the intersection of Center Street and Virginia Avenue. There are a couple of pipes that will go underneath the railroad tracks, so we're expanding those to get a little more capacity through here, then onward to our treatment plant, Maurer said. The need for the work also displaced a homeless encampment in June 2025, which community social service agencies addressed. The work targets what officials describe as a critical bottleneck in the system, comparable to a multi-lane highway narrowing down to fewer lanes, which can restrict the flow and contribute to backups during heavy rain events. Meanwhile, the project comes as the Water Reclamation District is advancing its $7.5 million Northwest Interceptor Sewer after receiving $5 million from a statewide economic development initiative. This will add about 2 miles of sewer along the Interstate 55-74 corridor, ultimately increasing wastewater capacity by 18.6 million gallons per day and opening the door for development across roughly 5,000 acres in West Bloomington and Northwest Normal. As for the improvements near Sugar Creek, these are designed to address the bottleneck that can lead to a combined sewer overflow, a condition in which heavy rainfall overwhelms the system and causes excess wastewater to spill into the stream. The system carries both wastewater and rainwater runoff from Central and East Bloomington as well as East Normal, which already exacerbates the systems while moving everything toward the treatment plant on Oakland Avenue. We're doing this project in hopes of being able to close this off permanently and no longer have that overflow point to the creek during wet weather, Maurer said. BNWRD Executive Director Tim Irvin said the need for the upgrades became more apparent after major flooding in 2021, which prompted a system-wide review of roughly 40 miles of interceptor sewers. That analysis identified the Sugar Creek area as a potential choke point, particularly because of its age and condition. After the 2021 flooding, we started assessing all 40 miles of our interceptor sewers and identifying bottlenecks, Irvin said. We looked at where basement backups were happening and started identifying patterns, then focused on how to prevent that in the future. Portions of the sewer system in the area date back to the early 1900s, with the last updates occurring in the 1980s. Irvin said the modernization efforts are necessary to meet updated water quality standards, replace aging infrastructure, and improve overall treatment capacity. Much of the existing system in the area is constructed of brick, which can deteriorate over time. As those structures weaken, Irvin said they can pose risks such as ground instability and the release of sewer gases, including hydrogen sulfide, which can be hazardous in confined or concentrated conditions. That sewer was a brick system, so as the bricks deteriorate, you can get around settlement and you can get ground settlement and sewer gases coming up, Irvin said. Hydrogen sulfide can be deadly. It's something we monitor anytime we go into a confined space. The current work is part of a broader multi-phase effort. A separate project involves rehabilitating roughly 2,400 feet of a 33-inch brick sewer along the Kelsey Street interceptor using a cured-in-place pipe lining method. That process reinforces the existing structure by installing a resin liner that hardens into a new pipe. Another key component is eliminating the active combined sewer overflow along Sugar Creek. A 2023 study recommended increasing flow capacity in the area, including installing larger piping beneath the railroad track, the work now in progress. The first phase of the project is estimated to cost about $3.25 million, while the interceptor rehabilitation carries an estimated cost of $800,000. Mara said much of the underground work is already complete. They've actually moved very quickly, he said. They bored the pipe underneath the railroad tracks. Then there's a connection that needs to go on the other side of the tracks, just north of the city's water department on Division Street. Crews still need to complete connections near Division Street and install supporting structures before the system becomes operational. Maurer said the project should be substantially complete by midsummer, with the final site restoration, including grading and seeding, expected in the fall. The construction area is also adjacent to a former homeless encampment that local officials disbanded a year ago to make way for the infrastructure work. Irvin said the encampment, formed while planning for the sewer improvements, was already underway, and the deteriorating condition of the underlying infrastructure ultimately needed the project to move forward on an accelerated timeline. Because the site sat near critical sewer infrastructure and natural creek corridors, Irvin said such locations can present challenges when balancing public works projects with broader community issues. BNWRD coordinated with community organizations, including Home Sweet Home Ministries, to assist with relocation efforts for people who are living at the site. Irvin emphasized that while they are equipped to manage infrastructure projects, addressing housing and social needs requires coordination across multiple agencies and community partners. We're a sewer utility. We're equipped to deal with infrastructure. The social issues are where we're less experienced, Irvin said. These are community-wide issues that take multiple agencies working together. Since then, Home Sweet Home has opened its 56-bed shelter village known as The Bridge earlier this year and has received a donation in the form of Eastview's Community Center building at 602 South Main Street in Bloomington. As for the ongoing sewer work, Maurer urged drivers to use caution when traveling through the construction zone. Just be careful driving by, he said. People slow down to see what's going on, and that can lead to fender benders. Also on the front page, we have Painted Trees Abrupt Closure Slams Vendors, also by Matus Janique. Glenn and Nancy Miller had just gotten started. The normal couple, ages 88 and 87, opened their booth at Painted Tree Boutique only 3 days before learning the store would be shutting down. They had just paid hundreds of dollars to lease a stall at the store and only sold a handful of items. We thought it was a joke, Glenn Miller said. Then we pulled into the parking lot and saw everyone hauling things out. Instead of settling into a new retirement hobby, the Millers found themselves packing up their inventory almost as soon as they had set it out. Dozens of small business owners who operate out of the Painted Tree, located at 1500 East Empire Street in Bloomington, were left scrambling last week after receiving a sudden email on April 14th notifying them the store will be closing. According to that email, vendors have until 6 p.m. Friday, April 24th, to remove all their merchandise from the building. We understand the impact this has on you and your business, and we are truly sorry, according to the email. We know many of you have invested significant time, energy, and resources into building your spaces at Painted Tree, and this is not the outcome any of us hopes for. The company owns 61 stores throughout the United States, including the Bloomington location, which had opened almost a year ago before it announced its sudden closure last week. Vendors shared a mix of shock, frustration, and concern over the lost income, especially for those who recently invested in the business. On April 14th, many vendors described the store as a chaotic scene after the news spread. It was a madhouse, said Mike Lockett, a local author who ran Grandpa Mike's store. Everybody was trying to get as much of their stuff out as they could. Some owners immediately rushed to the store after receiving the email because they were unsure whether the landlord would allow them back in. There were people worried the doors might be locked the next day, said Bikini Branch, owner of Seven Boy Mom Craft Company. So everybody just rushed to get everything out. The result was a mass exodus with vendors carrying boxes, dismantling displays, and in some cases renting trucks to remove their belongings. For many vendors, Painted Tree was more than a side business. Riley Waldrop opened her boutique, Thread as Old as Time, while 6 months pregnant after moving to Bloomington from Florida. I built my whole booth myself, she said. It was something I created for me. Now, as a full-time college student with a young child, Waldrop said the sudden closure was a huge letdown, not just for her, but for other vendors. You could hear people saying how proud they were of what they built, she said. It was really sad. Joe Sinkovich of Papa James Workshop echoed the sentiment. I feel bad for the people who just started, he said. We'll be okay, but for some people, this is going to hurt. Vendors paid a monthly rent typically between around $150 and $600, depending on the booth size, along with a 10% commission from monthly sales to cover credit card fees, bags, and staffing. Many also paid a security deposit or lease payments up front. Tracy Sauer, who owns More of Me Boutiques in Streeter, leased a booth at Painted Tree to help grow her business and reach new customers. She said she now expects to lose several hundred dollars. I just thought I could pick up another type of audience here with the local colleges, she said. I think I'm going to be out $700 or $800. Others worry about the recent investment they just made. The Millers paid roughly $930 in total to get started just days before the closure. Adding to the burden are questions about whether vendors will receive their remaining sales payout or security deposits. I'm not hopeful, Waldrop said. If they file for bankruptcy, I don't think we're getting that money. While the shutdown came as a shock to many, some vendors said the company had been showing signs of trouble over time. There were payment issues starting late summer 2025, Sauer said. The writing was on the wall. Several vendors reported delays in receiving their payers after Painted Tree changed its system. Branch said she went months without payments during that transition. Still, others said there was little indication the store would close so abruptly. There was supposed to be an event that week, Branch said. Nothing suggested this was coming. Despite the closure, vendors largely praised the Painted Tree for its model of business. The boutique allowed small business owners and others to rent a space and sell products without the massive upfront purchase and overhead costs of a traditional storefront. It gave people a chance to have a brick-and-mortar store without all the costs, said Vivian Kong Doctora, whose children operated a booth. Doctora, who is a partial owner of Kobe Revolving Sushi Bar, said the concept fostered entrepreneurship and community among local vendors. I actually loved it, she said. It was a great opportunity for people to start small. Many also commended the local staff who continued assisting vendors during the closure. The employees have been great, Lockett said. This isn't their fault. With Painted Tree gone, vendors are now searching for alternatives. Some plan to return to markets and festivals, while others are exploring new retail spaces or collaborative opportunities. Doctora said she is allowing Painted Tree vendors a spot at her upcoming Young Entrepreneur Market this Saturday to help displaced sellers move inventory. You can visit thecollectivebn.com/YEMBN/ to learn more. For vendors like the Millers, the experience has been disappointing and short-lived. For others, it represents the abrupt end of a year or more of work. It just feels like the end of something that had a lot of potential, Waldrop said. And for many, the biggest frustration isn't just from the closure, but how quickly it happened. To give people almost no notice, Branch said, that is the hardest part. We have Illinois seeks to save SNAP. 150,000 households may lose federal aid May 1st by Jenna Schweikert with Capital News Illinois. When the One Big Beautiful Bill Act passed last July, millions of U.S. residents were put at risk of losing access to federal food assistance, including hundreds of thousands of Illinoisans. Because of eligibility and work requirement changes, President Donald Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act, also known as H.R. 1, made to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, certain groups of immigrants and some households without dependents have already lost or are at risk of losing access to their SNAP benefits this spring. Among those at risk is Chicago resident Titania, a mother of three children, ages 6, 3, and 1. She's been on SNAP for almost 6 years since her first child, her son Joshua, was born. She requested to be identified only by her first name. Titania briefly lost access to her SNAP benefits when her son was an infant and struggled before she was able to re-enter the program. Even now, balancing work and SNAP eligibility is a catch-22, she said. When I do start working, now I have to turn in my paychecks, and if I make too much, then I have to figure out if they're going to cut me off or not because I'm making too much, Titania said. But she has to work at least enough to afford necessities outside of food, things like childcare and housing. Currently, she receives about $975 a month from SNAP for her and her three children. The average grocery trip is a very stressful experience, and she doesn't have much support outside of herself, she said. And if she were to lose access to SNAP again, I don't know, Titania said. It's stressful. I'm more anxious now. HR 1's new work requirements went into effect February 1st. Recipients who can't meet the requirements can only receive up to 3 months of SNAP benefits in a 3-year period. May will be the first month that some households will lose those benefits. And as of April 1st, the only immigrants who can receive SNAP benefits are lawful permanent residents, certain immigrants from Cuba and Haiti, and people living in the U.S. under a Compact of Free Association, a work and trade agreement between the U.S. and the Marshall Islands, Micronesia, and Palau. This removes eligibility from some refugees, asylum seekers, certain trafficking and domestic violence survivors, and other location-specific groups of immigrants. Save Our SNAP, a new Illinois-based coalition of more than 85 religious and social groups, food assistance providers, and health and human services organizations, rallied on Tuesday, April 14th, at the Illinois Capitol to ask lawmakers to support three bills that would provide support to those who've lost access to these benefits. I know what this means because I've lived close to it. I've been on SNAP. I've watched my mother stretch meals for seven people, Senator Graciela Guzman, a Democrat from Chicago, said at the rally. SNAP was not abstract in my life. It was not a talking point. I get to stand here as a senator because I had SNAP. Titania was one of hundreds who attended the rally, and she brought her three children with her from Chicago. It's important to me, she said, of the initiative. I feel like the goal was to be heard. It's very helpful to be able to go out there and rally. Nearly 1 million Illinois households received SNAP benefits in February 2026, down from just over 1 million in February 2025. According to the coalition, over 250,000 households are affected by the changes HR 1 made, and 150,000 of those have not yet submitted documentation of work, training, volunteering, or exemption to keep their benefits, according to a news release from Governor J.B. Pritzker. Recipients can check their status here. Too many of our neighbors are struggling to feed themselves and their families. Too many are having to make really impossible decisions about paying for shelter, paying for medicine, putting food on the table. Katie Maurer, executive director and CEO of the Greater Chicago Food Depository, said at the rally, "We have to come here and lift our voice because we cannot stand by." SNAP recipients looking for a way to earn hours and remain eligible can visit Job Ready Illinois to earn SNAP training hours or serveillinois.gov to find volunteer hours. Additional work-related resources from the state are also available here. Not feeding people is a choice, Guzman said at the rally. This is not about waste. This is not about fraud. And this is not about responsibility. This is about cruelty. This is about power. Guzman is a sponsor on Senate Bills 3277, 3276, and 3167, the three bills that Save Our SNAP is championing. The House versions have all missed the committee deadline, although that doesn't mean they won't come back later. The Senate bills are still being considered in a committee. The measures call for funding, but don't provide funding sources, meaning lawmakers would have to separately allocate money in the budget process. SB 3277 would establish a program, Families Receiving Emergency Support for Hunger, that would give out one-time $600 payments to families who experienced a complete or partial loss of SNAP funding due to the new work requirements. That's roughly equivalent to 3 months of the average SNAP benefit. To address the other group of SNAP recipients at risk, SB 3167 would extend eligibility of Illinois Victims of Trafficking, Torture, and Other Serious Crimes program to certain immigrants if they are not eligible for SNAP benefits due to H.R. 1's new citizenship or immigration status requirements. The Trafficking Victim Program provides medical housing, cash, and food assistance to non-U.S. citizen victims of human trafficking and other serious crimes. In 2024, the law was narrowed to exclude certain visa seekers, asylum seekers, individuals, and those in institutions that cover 50% or more of their daily meals. Last, SB 3276 would create a SNAP response working group to measure the impacts of HR 1 on Illinois recipients, gather data on the state's error rate, and issue a report to the General Assembly with recommendations on mitigating the effects of losing federal funding to the program. This marks the beginning of a unified statewide effort to ensure that no one in Illinois, the greatest state in this great country, has to worry about where their next meal is going to come from, Mayor said. We do this work not alone, not as a community organization in one neighborhood or as a food bank that serves one part of the state. We do this together as volunteers, as service providers, as advocates, and as neighbors. Next, we have Olympia FFA member Levi Hanlon named District Proficiency Winner by Olivia Jacobs. Levi Hanlon of Olympia FFA was named the District FFA Proficiency Winner in Wildlife Production and Management. Hanlon is the son of Jeff and Becky Hanlon of rural McLean. He was selected as the District 2 winner by a committee of agriculture industry representatives and teachers in his work-based area. This honor made him eligible to compete at the State FFA Awards selection process held Saturday, March 21st in Mount Zion. He was previously chosen as the chapter and section awardee in this area and will receive a plaque for his latest accomplishment. Hanlon also has been involved in other ag education and FFA activities, including a focus on parliamentary procedure, agronomy, and land use. He has served as secretary for the Olympia FFA chapter in this school year under advisors Meg Bayer and Bryce Hoffman. Illinois recognizes 48 different areas based on work-based learning, FFA members who demonstrate outstanding agriculture skills and competencies through record-keeping, leadership, and scholastic achievement are considered for the award, according to a news release. Supervised agricultural experiences allow students to learn by owning and operating an agriculture business, working or serving an internship at an ag-based business, or conducting an ag-based scientific experiments and reporting results. And we have Spring Forum on Housing Crisis set for April 28th in Bloomington, also by Olivia Jacobs. The Women to Women Giving Circle will host a Spring Forum next week on community solutions to the housing crisis. The event is open to the public and will be held at 4:30 p.m. Tuesday, April 28th, in Community Rooms 1 and 2 at the Bloomington Public Library at 205 East Olive Street. According to the Regional Planning Commission housing data, McLean County's rental vacancy rate has fallen from 7.8% in 2010 to 5.5% in 2023, while the cost to rent one- or two-bedroom dwellings increased by more than 30% from 2019 to 2024. Two representatives who helped provide shelter for residents without permanent homes will speak, including Matt Burgess, a CEO of Home Sweet Home Ministries, and Kim Turner, Board Chair for Regional Housing and Supportive Services and Hope on 5th in Lincoln. Diane Zosky, Emeritus Professor from the Illinois State University School of Social Work, will moderate the discussion. A Q&A session will follow the panel. Registration is encouraged but not required. Register at ilprairiecf.org/women-to-women-spring-forum or by calling 309-662-4477. And with that, we complete the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, April 21st, 2026. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.